I think the difference between him and Piastri, I think it was laid bare, Piastri defending the wrong driver there, out of the two, Max Verstappen or George Russell, who do you pick? Max every time, surely.
Hello and welcome to the James Allen on F1 podcast brought to you by Autosport. F1 took another twist at the weekend in the Made in Italy Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix in Imola as Max Verstappen came roaring back to dominant form while Ferrari had a weekend of two halves in front of the Tifosi. And Aston Martin had their strongest showing of the year, speed-wise at least, in qualifying at least. So what's going on and will Monaco give us a different picture once again? Here to analyse all this with me and to look at what it all means for Monaco, we have motorsport.com editor-in-chief Ben Hunt. G'day, Ben.
G'day, James.
An F1 writer and performance analyst. I've just given you that title.
Amazing, thank you.
Jake Boxall Legg.
Do I have to say g'day as well?
Please do. Please do.
Later on, we're going to check in with our Italian colleague Roberto Quinquero for the inside track on Ferrari's home weekend. But let's start with your moment of the race weekend, Ben. You were there on the ground. You're getting all the feels from that huge crowd, all the passion of the Tifosi. What moment stood out for you?
Yeah, mega weekend. I think the proximity of the fans is something interesting about Imola. The press room is now quite far out the paddock and we're next to the stage, which is quite hilarious because it plays big, heavy dance music when we're all sitting there trying to work. But of course, what that does, it actually brings you into the experience. And I think, you know, it's a shame that that race is dropping off the calendar for a number of reasons, but it was really good to see so many fans. I think the thing that struck me the most was obviously the Italian fans, but so much love for Colapinto as well. Colapinto making his Alpine debut. So many Argentine football shirts and flags. You know, he really is making an impact. And I think that was
literally
probably, it was quite unexpected. You know, I took the Ferrari stuff, and obviously watching Lewis Hamilton make his Ferrari debut in Italy was great. I thought it was a great race as well, actually.
It was. Jake, what was your moment of the race weekend?
So I didn't quite get the same feeling from the Tifosi because I was watching the race on a train back from Devon. So it was a slightly different atmosphere of someone just sort of slowly eyeing up my phone screen trying to watch along, but I was quite impressed by the move that Max Verstappen made at the start of the race, that you could really see, I think, the difference between him and Piastri. I think it was laid bare, Piastri defending the wrong driver there, out of the two, Max Verstappen or George Russell, who do you pick? Max every time, surely. And that was an opportunity for Verstappen to go straight through. So I think that was it for me, and for various other things I'm sure we'll talk about through the podcast. But I was super impressed by Alex Albon. Williams as well had a good race there.
Yeah, it was Red Bull's 400th Grand Prix, and it was in many ways, Ben, a sort of textbook Max Verstappen win, built on the platform of that very bold move. Then the way he kind of managed the race, he had to soak up a fair bit of pressure. Yeah. Obviously got a bit of a lucky break with the virtual safety car, but it felt to me, you know, he's won 65 Grand Prix now, but it felt to me we've seen that race before. Yeah. Like
it was like a repeat, wasn't it?
For me, that was a point when that overtake happened in the first lap. People in the press room were clapping, and you know that these people are very sage, aren't they?
And cynical, you mean?
Yeah, very much so. And they were usually very critical of Max as well, for various different reasons. But people were applauding that moment, and I thought that was interesting. It was a great overtake, but he, as you mentioned, James, he didn't have it all his own way, and I think, speaking to Christian Horner after the race, there was so much relief that, yes, it was the 400th and the occasion and everything else, but this was the first time, I think, that he said since Brazil 23, where they had the actual pace in the car, and he did that thing, Max did that thing of getting in front and then just building that lead and then holding that position and giving him that buffer that allowed him just to work the car until the end. And, you know, it was a textbook performance and a big boost in morale. I mean, this is at a time when, you know, Horner's position has been questioned. You know, is he going to stay? You know, is Ollie Oakes going to come in and replace him? You know, what's the feedback from the technical team? Obviously, Adrian Newey leaving, you know, haven't had a great start to the year, but now it feels like they are making progress. And of course, if they follow it up this weekend in Monaco, we'll be saying, crisis, what crisis? You know, this is now a three-way fight for the championship, which is, you know, we want more drivers, but hey, that's not bad, is it?
Jake, maybe you can explain this to us then, given your new performance analyst title that I've just given you in the last half hour. We know that the Red Bull's very good on where there's fast corners. That obviously plays its part. But so why were they so good there? And Monaco being Monaco, a very different sort of track, how do you see that the shift?
Well, I think the key part of Red Bull's performance in the high-speed corners is the fact that it's just been able to activate that floor a lot better than everybody else has from the very beginning of these regulations. It's not just about building downforce, but it's also about that downforce kind of retention through the corners as well, because when you're turning through a high-speed corner, you're going through the car is changing, you know, the dynamics are changing all the time, and it's all about how you hang on to that downforce and doing so at different stages in the corner, and so you have to simulate that and iterate that and various other things. And Red Bull just seems to have got that so much more right than everybody else. And at Imola, you've got, you know, corners like Pirotella, for example, where sure you are braking, but you are essentially flinging the car through the corner at the highest speed you can, and then going downhill, and then doing the same part with the first part of Acqua Minerale. You need the downforce there to ensure that you're carrying the speed, essentially, and that's where Red Bull has just been so good. The problem is, and we have seen this through the last few years of Formula One, it hasn't been quite so good at short radius corners, at bumpy street circuits, at things like that, and it's been incredibly difficult for that team because these cars are so rigid, and the way that it's built, it just doesn't have a lot of leeway to kind of develop that suspension package to give it a little bit more latitude, let's say. So I'm expecting things to be a little bit difficult in Monaco for it, and it has been for the last couple of years. 2023, I think it won by default. It didn't really have any competitors of note that could really punish it. Aston Martin maybe tried, but didn't quite make it. And then 2024, some way down on the Ferraris and the McLarens and maybe even the Mercedes that weekend. I expect McLaren to be in a little bit of a better shape in Monaco because when it comes to those kinds of corners, it's just in a much better state. And Red Bull improved a lot at Imola, but I don't think enough to make it a compelling force on the street circuit just yet.
It's the 11th time that Verstappen and Norris have finished 1-2 in that order. And to be fair, it was a pretty strong Sunday from Lando Norris after a pretty disappointing Saturday. What was his body language like? What were you seeing? He must have been pretty chipper after he came through to finish second.
I think any time that he finishes ahead of Oscar at this moment in time is a result, isn't it? Wherever they are in the grid. I think that he was relieved. You know, Piastri was opening up quite a commanding lead. He seemed to have confidence in the car, and everything was obviously moving in the right direction for him. I think that this was sort of Norris striking back and did a good job at the weekend, actually. I think probably a little bit more under the radar than most people give him credit for, but you know, I thought he did a solid weekend.
So you talk about the points. Piastri retains that championship lead, but the top three are now separated by just 22 points as we head off to Monaco this weekend. We've talked a little bit about the relative performance of Red Bull and McLaren, but what about Mercedes? I mean, you had them down. In fact, you've got George Russell down as being a dark horse for the championship. Do you see anything from what happened in Imola that suggests that Mercedes could be competitive in Monaco this weekend?
I think when you look at Mercedes' performance over Imola, it exposed, let's say, the kind of issues that it had last season with regards to tyre temperature and not being able to manage it quite on the same level as the Red Bulls and the McLarens and maybe even Ferraris to a certain degree, because when you look at the race that Ferrari had at Imola, they were some way ahead of Mercedes. George Russell struggled through that race, and yeah, sure, he wasn't on a particularly, let's say, fortuitous strategy. He had to end up ended up going back through the field and having to sort of carve his way through. But there just wasn't really any particular pace there. In fact, Russell said that he thought that there was an issue with the suspension at the back of the car because it was just so loose and he just wasn't able to get the traction down. He wasn't able to do much with the rear end of the car. And when you're overheating the rear tyres, you're just at a point where, and you're sliding, you're just at a point where you can't really bring it back. So I think races like that, and we're going to get into, we're getting into the summer months now as well. The races are going to be hot. The track conditions are going to be hot. And Mercedes is going to probably struggle a little bit more than we anticipated in those conditions. And so you mentioned that I had Russell down as a dark horse. I might have to revise that if this continues because, again, Austria is always hot, isn't it? It feels like that's going to be a struggle. Canada might be hot. It can go either way. That might be a struggle as well. So we'll have to sort of wait and see whether they can turn that around.
Yeah, it is strange, isn't it, the temperature thing? I mean, he said as soon as the temperatures go up, we struggle with the car. And you look back to the wins last year in Spa, Silverstone for Hamilton, and then Vegas was really cold, wasn't it? And he came into the press room with this giant hoodie where he was so cold. Actually, he jumped into some water as well, which probably didn't help. But he had this giant hoodie where it was freezing cold. And when it is cold, it seems to work. But of course, majority of the places we go to, it's boiling hot. So, you know, bit of a problem. And a word on Kimi Antonelli, slightly disappointing finish for him after the weekend. And I think what was interesting, not only was all this level of support, but the fact that he recognised that he took on too much. And he said, you know, the occasion got to him, which I thought was, you know, fair play. I mean, he's only 18 and he's acknowledged that. And that's something that Mercedes will need to manage going into Monza and probably not load him up with too many PR events.
Jake, you mentioned a minute ago about Aston Martin being quite competitive in Monaco a couple of years ago, and they were quite a talking point, I thought, at the weekend, because seemingly from nowhere, on Saturday particularly, they got both cars into Q3. That's not happened before. And Alonso, what was he, fifth, and Stroll eighth, I think it was, on the grid. Where did that speed come from? Has someone sort of found the goal faster button, or has Adrian Newey sort of spent an afternoon on the car, or what's been going on?
So what we know is that Aston did have new upgrades for the car. It was actually quite a big package of upgrades. It had a new floor, like all the various bits and pieces, new bodywork to suit that. It was just basically making sure that everything is a little bit more of a cohesive package. It's been in the pipeline since actually December last year. So when you're developing a Formula One car, you go through the year. I think people think that it starts later than it does. Actually, you're going through the entire year already sort of putting things in place for, even January last year, you're putting things in place for 2025. And you're sort of building up and you're designing. You get to a point around kind of October, November, where you have to freeze the design and say, okay, this is what we're going to put into production, and everything else that comes after that, you are going to package that. Are you going to continue looking at it, and you're going to package that up, and you might bring that later on in an update? So they got to their design freeze, and all of these sort of things that were brought to Imola were developed over December, January, February. And then when the new wind tunnel came online, it then validated those parts in the new tunnel as almost a sort of correlation exercise. And then have now brought it to the circuit. So it's been in gestation for quite a long time. So clearly they'd found an uptick in performance in qualifying. And as we know, it didn't quite happen in the race. But it was, I think, a little bit of that, a little bit of unlocking performance on the Friday. Everything was run on Stroll's car and then decided it's good enough, we'll put it on Fernando's car. But it was also a little bit of a trick of using the C5 tyres, which were the mediums for the weekend, our usual, you know, softest compounds, but we had the C6s, putting them in for the final session because the C6s were dropping off about halfway through the lap. And so, yeah, sure, you might have a 0.4, 0.5 second delta of tyres. I know Ben is loving tyre chat, by the way.
You know what? I wish I'd timed this because I was waiting how long we would get to tyre chat. Surprisingly, it's taken longer than I thought. But no, you're right. I mean, you're definitely right to pick up on the C6s because they were lasting half a lap and it was a talking point from a weekend. So I will let you carry on. I'm sorry.
So, but yeah, you're losing half, and you might, as I say, you might have 0.4, 0.5 a second of a delta through a lap. But if you can't reclaim that in the final sector and that just drops away, then what's the point? Try a set of C5s if it holds on for the whole lap, and you might make something else up. And that's what they did. And clearly it did last for the whole lap. They found something and sort of chanced on a tactic that no one else did. For strategy and other reasons, it didn't happen in the race for them. I think Fernando pitted at exactly the wrong time and then complained.
Oh, that he most was unluckiest driver,
most unlucky
in,
driver
Formula
in Formula One. Two-time champion, who'd have thought? but yeah, I think they can be satisfied with some of the things that they've shown this weekend.
The tyre chat is relevant, though, because we've got the same C6 compound coming to Monaco, haven't we? And, of course, with the extra pit stop, they're trying to liven things up. Some would say probably artificially, but...
it's going to be interesting for sure, because I just think we'll be open to strategy in Monaco. I don't know if we'll see the C6s in the race, but either way, I'll be fascinated.
You've got some slightly iffy-looking weather as well. The last time I looked at my iPhone, other phones are available, I saw it on the app. It didn't look that clever, particularly for practice.
Is it going to be cold? Because if it's cold, then maybe George will win, and maybe the you know, the championship will be back on for him.
Sometimes the best Monacos are the ones where you get a bit of a wet, dry race. I mean, think of some absolute crackers in the Rosberg-Hamilton years. You know,
say that, those were the times.
Yeah, some really, really good ones. You wrote a piece, Ben, on Leclerc, saying you can't accept the situation that we are in. This is not just an Imola question. This is a Ferrari 2025 question. You know, what did you read into that?
Rinse, repeat, isn't it? I think that he's, like Lewis Hamilton, very frustrated in the lack of progress. It's really interesting, isn't it, the attitude of Ferrari. I mean, they came into this new season with a new driver lineup. You know, they absolutely aced the Hamilton announcement and the unveiling and all the wave of good, you know, support and positivity that generated. But the reality is the performances have been very underwhelming. And both those drivers, Hamilton was actually quite happy on Sunday, but generally they're quite doom and gloom and a little bit at a loss to understand where they're making progress, where they're losing, and just a lot of guesswork. Every time that they seem to go into a weekend, they go down a particular avenue and it always proves to be the wrong one. You know, add in a little bit of complicated strategy where they're trying to scramble and the problem's just compounded. So, very frustrated. You know, he was asked about winning. He obviously won Monaco last year. Much relief and celebrations were great. Can you win this time around? No, I don't think so. You know, he's already ruled it out, which tells you everything you need to know.
So a very mixed weekend for Ferrari. Let's get the view now from the prancing horse's mouth, as it were, from Italy, from our colleague Roberto Quinquero.
You're listening to the James Allen and F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, head to the Autosport F1 channel.
Talking with the former Ferrari driver always come true how special is the first race in Italy when you become a Ferrari driver. And I think it was the same for Lewis. And what surprised me a bit has been the reception that Lewis had from Tifosi, because there's no doubt that Ferrari's season so far has been very, very different compared to expectation. I remember before the start of the season. And this could have dampening enthusiasm of the supporters, but never happened. Of course, we have not seen any celebration. There's no reason for that. But after the race, I personally witnessed the moment when Lewis came out of the box just to greet the tifosi from the pit wall. And it was a special moment. There were no whistles, just cheering. And inside Lewis with a message, the best will come. And I'm sure Lewis dreamed to jump on the podium in front of the tifosi. But at the moment, it's simply not possible considering the performance of the car. Imola was a very, very intense weekend for Ferrari. Saturday has been a real nightmare. In the briefing the team did before the qualifying, the target was P4, P5. And to miss Q3 was a huge disappointment. There's no doubt that the team underestimated how to use the C6 tires compound, and they pay a big, big price for that. But of course, the result was not because of the real potential of the car. And Sunday, we have seen the two Ferraris in the position they deserve. That at the moment is not the podium, but is, I think, P5, P6 in every condition. I think the end result has just been about the same they will achieve starting from the third row of the starting grid. About Lewis, he did a consistent race that is the same we have seen in Miami 2 weeks ago. Of course, the potential of the car make it difficult to see the steps that Lewis is taking. When you fight for P4 or P5, you cannot be happy. But in terms of progress, in my opinion, Lewis did an important steps in the last two races. And I underline also the small gap with Leclerc in qualifying. That is another important topic. For sure, the problem that Ferrari has at the moment are not the drivers. The biggest problem is the car. And we are moving to Monaco with a lot of question mark about the target that Ferrari can achieve next weekend. Last Saturday in Imola, Leclerc said that Monaco is showing all the weakness of his car. So he thinks it's going to have a very tough weekend. But that was after the qualifying, and for sure was not in a very, very good mood. But anyway, I'm not expecting a great weekend from Ferrari. So far, the car had not a good performance in the slot corner and interaction. Two key points of Monaco. But this seems this season, I think, make predictions very, very difficult. Imola seems to be a perfect scenario for McLaren 1-2, and then we have seen a completely different result. So I'm sure that Leclerc is an additional value in Monaco, but I don't think we have the chance to be in a better place than P4 on the grid, and that one should be, in my opinion, a kind of miracle.
So, Jake, let's sum it all up then. How do we see the likely performance picture in Monaco, bearing in mind all the indicators that we've seen so far this season? Imola, not at all really a representative track for gauging the form of Monaco. But based on all the tracks that F1's visited so far, if I put you down and say that, which are going to be the five fastest cars in what order, what would you say?
I think I'm going to put McLaren at the top. And it might be warm in Monaco, but it's not. You're not overheating the tyres quite so much. You're not putting quite so much load through them. So I think Mercedes will be competitive. Red Bull and Max Verstappen should be competitive. I don't think I could ever pick a weekend on the calendar and say anywhere where Max couldn't have a chance of winning. And I think by default, Ferrari is in that mix for sure. But Williams as well. Alex Albon said after the race at Imola, he felt he should have got a podium at the weekend, at the very least fourth place. And the fact that he was held up by Leclerc and Hamilton got past, that was the only reason they didn't finish fourth. But he expects Williams to be quite good at Monaco this coming weekend. And I think the car's just a bit of an all-rounder now. It seems to be really benign in the hands of the drivers. So I think they've got to be in there, but I think there's going to be a wild card, James, because we've got this mandatory two-stop strategy. We don't necessarily know what's going to happen, but what is to stop a backmarker or someone that's qualified a bit out of position to go and do their two stops at the start of the race, hang it all out for a safety car, and then essentially wait for everybody else to come around again and make the most track position and do the whole race on a set of hard tyres?
It ruined it for everyone.
Who knows? Well, someone might give it a go. I don't think I've ruined it. I think I'm trailing it quite nicely Gabriel Bortoleto to win his first Grand Prix or something like that.
I was thinking of Oliver Behrman. I mean, that'd be quite a nice one for you.
Somebody.
Who amongst the rookies has shone really over the years in Monaco in the junior categories?
I'm trying to remember their results now.
Do you remember Maldonado was always a real rock star around Monaco, wasn't he? In the
F2. I think I'm looking at form rookies at the moment, and obviously Antonelli's performance last weekend aside, I think Hajar has had a steady couple of weeks. He's definitely been under the radar, and Roberto, who you spoke to a minute ago, was keeping an eye on him last weekend. So yeah, I think he could be an interesting one. I'm also quite excited to see what happens with Tsunoda. I think that there's a lot of pressure now on Yuki. As we know, Red Bull, fairly ruthless with all the chopping and changing. But I think there is a lot of pressure on him to deliver, and he knows he needs to deliver a good, solid, error-free weekend. Of course, it's a tough place to do it. He had a great recovery drive in Imola, but he needs to really now this weekend. And Colapinto's another one. I want to see a good, strong race from him.
I love Monaco. I've been pretty much every year. And one of the things I love to do is go down by the swimming pool, and you're able to go and stand trackside. I remember going down every year with Martin Brundle when we were commentators together for ITV, and there's a kind of metal box, like a communications box with, like, you know, like a BT mm-hmm. box. And I was sort of standing right on the outside of the first part of the swimming pool, and he realized that, you know, how close you are to the cars. They're coming straight at you, and there's only the width of a Marmco barrier between you. And he stood behind this box just for the extra layer of protection, because he had more imagination than I did.
but I mean, that is the best spot, isn't it?
It's a brilliant spot. And you know what? The other thing, Ben, is that it's a great spot because you can see things that you can't see any other way. And that was the first place that I actually realized that one thing that is very special about Max Verstappen, this is literally in his first season in Formula One, was he came through there and it was the speed of his hands on the wheel. You could see it. And his hands were visibly faster on the wheel than anybody else's. And you just okay, that's interesting. Obviously, yeah. I'm sure there's others who have come through since who are quick. But that was the first time he really, really clocked mm-hmm. this guy. I see that in addition to all the other gifts he's got in terms of a tough sporting mentality and all the rest of it, he's got, you know, something very, very special physically that makes him a top driver. There we go. Well, that'll do for us now. It's time to get out to Monaco for, as I say, one of my favourite race weekends of the season. It's going to be a busy one. We're hosting an Autosport Business Exchange event with F1 exclusively for sponsors who are new to the sport over the course of the weekend. My thanks for now, though, to Ben and to Jake. You can read all of their latest news and insights on F1 on the Autosport and Motorsport channels, and of course our colleague Roberto Quinquero as well. And do join our fast-growing Fantasy League community. Check out motorsport.com for details or the episode description notes. Remember to send in all your comments and questions to @JamesAllenOnF1 at Twitter/X. And my thanks to Dre on production, and thanks to you all for listening. Please click to follow or subscribe, leave us a review and a rating, and tell all your F1 mad friends about us. We will be back with another podcast very soon.
You've been listening to the James Allen on F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, check out the Autosport F1 channel, wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple and Spotify.